Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
On the podcast this year, we want to make a difference. That's why we've teamed up with the Motor Neuron Disease Association to help them in the fight against MND. Motor neuron disease is a fatal and rapidly progressive disease that leaves people locked in their own body, unable to talk, move, swallow, and eventually breathe. If you'd like to help the MNDA continue to provide care and support for those with MND, please head to www.justgiving.com/boroughbreakdownMND and donate what you can.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Avanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Avanelli spots out. Emerson!
Hello and welcome back to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Johnny, Dinner and Tom. We're the Borough podcast that gives you all of Borough matchday chatter in a podcast. And in this podcast, we're going to chat about Borough's activity in the market with Gazette reporter Craig Johns. Look ahead to Borough's Carabao Cup tie with Blackpool and the return to the Riverside against Bristol City on Saturday. But first, on Thursday, we're hosting a Borough quiz at the Playbrew Co. Playbrew is at Cannon Park and the event is nearly sold out. So if you want to come, the bar is open at 6 and starts at 8. It's £2.50 a ticket. Prizes to be won as well, and you get to meet us wonderful people too. But also with the prizes, the best part, and with the prizes you can win a signed Borough shirt from there. But the podcast, the event will be in the podcast description when we release this podcast. But let's chat about the Borough. Middlesbrough were held to a 1-1 draw at Craven Cottage today against newly relegated Fulham. A goal from Mark Ball in the 76th minute shared the spoils at Craven Cottage. But before we get to the performance, guys, I just want to chat about the fans. It was so nice to see fans back in the stadium. The chorus of "You Are My Borough" before the game and singing throughout. How good was it to have fans back, guys?
That was fantastic. I remember saying to you in the group chat yesterday, I was watching Soccer Saturday, and everywhere they cut to, you could hear the fans singing. It was like nature's healing. And then it was definitely confirmed when you just heard that before the match. But also the Borough fans were the only thing I heard during the match. For, you know, what was it, 1,400 of us, that was a hell of a noise made for 90 minutes at Fulham. Fair play.
Dana, happy?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, what a soundtrack to a game, by the way. We really have missed them, and they were fantastic. I mean, what was it, 4 minutes the tickets were snapped up in? I mean, typical Borough fans, really. You can't knock them. And yeah, Yusuf there at the front, as per. We love Yusuf. And yeah, it was brilliant to hear them, brilliant to see them. And roll on Bristol City. It's made me really excited for that game now, the return to the Riverside.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it seemed really, it was nice for Neil Warnock as well. Warnock was delighted. He went and did the slow motion wind up.
I know, he was loving it.
It was like an older version of Gareth Southgate when he used to do it at the Sands, but he got there in the end. I feel like he's waited, 18 months to do that now. So Absolutely delighted for Neil Warnock, and it was a great point too. And let's chat about the game as well, guys. And Middlesbrough started off with three debutants at the start of the game of the day, and then fourth, of course, when you count Jones too, when he made his championship appearance. Appreciate he did play against Brentford last season in the FA Cup, but it was his first start, well, start in the first appearance in the championship. But guys, were you impressed with the performances today, especially the debutants? Dana, go on.
Well, Borough's performance as a whole, I thought, I mean, I was saying to you in the car, Johnny, they had me for a minute, because 70 minutes into the game, there or thereabouts, I was thinking, oh God, I was ready to rant on this podcast, because I was thinking, why are we just hoofing it into the channels? It was just very hit and hole. But to be fair, I always knew at the back of my mind that there was going to be a chance in there for Borough. And as Sam Morsey told us when he came on the podcast, we play moments, and Borough just had to take those moments, and we did, to be fair. Tav came on, Jones came on, they made a difference. It was Tav's driving run at the defence that started it. And yeah, we took that chance. It was a great goal, by the way, from Matt Bowler. I mean, Fabio Carvalho switched off and didn't track Bowler's run into the box. And then, to be fair, he had all the time in the world. It was a great touch, great control, and a great finish.
It really was. I was going to say, how would you assess the performance? But you're absolutely spot on. Borough really did grow into the game. But I think a big difference today, Dana, was the way Borough looked to press, really, because it seemed that Middlesbrough looked a few more yards up the pitch that made things difficult for Fulham to create real clear-cut chances by the goal. But overall, last year we spoke quite a lot about Borough's defensive lines to attack, and it seemed the gap was so much bigger, but today it seemed a lot closer. But why do you think Borough implemented that higher press and that man-marking system that we've seen today?
Well, I mean, the man-marking system has just been brought over from last season, has it? But I think the high press was mainly seen in the first half, and for all the quality that Fulham have on the ball out of defence, they also have one player in Tim Ream in defence that is very adept and comfortable at bringing the ball up from the back. So I think that was probably why I think Borough had to. There were a couple of moments in the second half where I think he did stroll into midfield, and to be fair, the second half was a bit difficult for Borough, because I don't think that when the changes were made they immediately made a difference. I think it took about 10-15 minutes for them to get in the game, but I think we had to press high. We did drop off a little bit in the second half, but as I said, they've got Tim Ream in defence. I don't think that's the sole reason why we did it, but I think that's a big factor as to why we did it, just so they didn't have that attacking input from the back.
Well, as we said on the podcast last week, Tim Ream had the best passing percentage of any centre-back in the Premier League last season. And obviously that means either a couple of things. One, he's very, very good at bringing the ball out, or two, you're very one-dimensional as a team. And that was pretty much both with Fulham last year, because under Scott Parker, they were very possession-based, very slow build-up, and it took them time to really get going. I think they only scored 9 goals in the Premier League at home last season. So it really showed that his strengths, but also Fulham in general, really. But in terms of what Dana was saying there, Tom, Middlesbrough, it took them about 70 minutes to really start creating chances. Fulham dominated the play. They were starting to create chances. Borough didn't have a shot on target until the 75th minute. And that was the goal, of course. And Mark Bowler, he was a villain at the start, I appreciate, where he let Harry Wilson go on with his left foot. We've seen that time and time again from him. And he scored, obviously, when he went through Dale Fry's legs as well to go through. But he came a hero, 76th minute. A lovely drive in the bottom corner. He hasn't had a pre-season. He's had COVID. He's had a couple of injuries. He started today. He was only originally going to play 55 minutes, but played the full 90. But how impressive has Mark Bowler been, not just today, but in the last 18 months? Because he's really came on board, hasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I think I've said on the pod before, there was a game, might have been when we got absolutely battered off Leeds, and we were just like, well, I don't see any way forward for him at Borough. He got loaned out to Blackpool shortly afterwards, and you're just thinking, yeah, that could be it. And then he's turned it around completely over the last year. I think it's one of them cases where, like, a manager is the perfect fit for a player or a group of players and improves them. And he's come on leaps and bounds since then. When he got the ball in the box and it dropped on his left foot, I was just thinking myself, like, there's no one else I'd want taking the shot from here, because we've seen him over the last season becoming like the Borough Roberto Carlos with some of his shots. Like, it's a shame he can't do the free kicks, but like some of his shots, they're so powerful and straight. You could just see him drilling that into the bottom corner as he did.
Ice in his veins, and I think it was a really good move from Borough as well, with the way Tav came in. Isaiah Jones was fantastic to create the space for ball, and it was very nice to see Borough have fullbacks so high up on the pitch. I think it was like five or six players in there, and that would probably make Neil Warnock very, very happy in that, because last year, a lot of times last year, we would have one or two men in the box. It was seemed very lackluster. We didn't get bodies forward, and we really struggled to score goals. But in those 74, 75 minutes, Tom, we didn't really look like scoring. Defensively, I thought we looked really comfortable. And, you know, bar the goal, I don't think Fulham really causes too many problems. And I thought Middlesbrough could, you know, try and get something from the game. I think that was Neil Warnock's plan all along, really. Soak it up for about 75 to 80 minutes and see if you can get something towards the end. But he tweaked the system around the 50th, 60th minute. He brought on Tavon Spence, and then a little bit later on he brought on Jones. But why do you think the changes helped Borough in the attacking third when those players came on?
We needed it. Just going back to what you said there, I do think we were comfortable. In defence, we didn't really allow him a lot. It was always going to be difficult against a team of Fulham's quality. You know, it's probably got the best attacking options in the league. And, you know, the Harry Wilson goal, probably avoidable if it'd been shown onto the other side, or, you know, if someone else had, I think they mentioned Hall on the TV, had stepped out from defence to help Bowler a little bit. But we did kind of keep him out until then. But I did say in our group chat at half time that we just didn't have any, you know, quality creative players going forwards, or any pace on the wings, which I think was that was affecting us. We had, you know, Ekpeazu putting in hell of a lot of effort up front to try and hold the ball up, but we didn't really have a lot of options going off him. But then when we've put the likes of Tav, Spence and Jones on, we've actually been able to create stuff on the floor, which is obviously how the goals come about as well. But they were also winning a decent amount of set pieces, which were causing Fulham issues.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think when you're saying there about creating chances on the floor, I think Middlesbrough's fluidity up top was really improved in that second half. And I think it was just the way that we were able to find the space between the lines, but also with Uche. And I think with Uche, when he came off, it wasn't, I don't think it was anything to do with his performance today. I thought he put in a good shift. I think the way he occupies the two centre-halves is absolutely superb and brings other players into play. But given that Watmore and Crooks weren't making those inverted runs, I thought it was really difficult for him to really make an impact. But in terms of Isaiah Jones, Dana, he came on, looked absolutely brilliant, and he was able to take on his man, create the space, got the assist as well for Ball's goal. But do you think we could see a little bit more of Isaiah Jones in the coming weeks?
Potentially, yeah. I think he'll definitely... I would be surprised if he doesn't start against Blackpool midweek in the Cup. He looked really good, didn't he? He's one of the breakout performers from pre-season. He's obviously had first-team experience as well. I think he was at Kilmarnock, was it, last season? So he's someone that has that under his belt, albeit in a different league. And he came on and like Tavi, changed the game. And I thought it was a great pass, to be fair. I mean, it looked simple, but he threaded it through to Matt Ball. He obviously spotted him in that space. And he was really good. I think Dom Shaw tweeted us, said that he changed the game, and he did. He looked really bright, and hopefully we do see more of him, because on that showing, he looks really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Middlesbrough being linked to wingers and forwards, him being so young, I think it could be natural for him to go out on loan again. But I think with that performance there, you can, do you know when you see like a performance that makes a manager think and start to put player into his plans? I feel like that could have been the performance from. I think it really did make the difference, did it? Were you surprised maybe not to see Pajero at all? Do you feel like the game was a bit too soon for him, Tom?
Probably, yeah. I think after we made the third sub, I was just kind of like, yeah, I kind of understand this. Fulham, like I said earlier, probably the best team in the league. And it was just probably after a few days training a bit too soon for him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get some time against Bristol next week, possibly against Blackpool in midweek as well. But I think tactically we had the players on that we needed to get the goal and change the game.
Yeah, well, at first I thought it was central midfielders, bro. Again, to be honest, when I first initially seen the lineup, but then I realised that it was more of like a, it was a weird formation we played today. I think it was we switched from like a 3-2-4 and then like a 4-3-3 and then like maybe a 4-5, and it was very fluid in a way because of the man marking system. But I don't think it really helped us going forward, to be honest. But either way, we got the point, and then that's what makes it. I mean, that's a great point on the road. But overall, guys, are we happy with the point? Are we happy with Borough's performance in general, Dana?
Yeah, I don't think you can be. I mean, obviously, you're happy with the point. As I said, for 70 minutes, I was thinking it was a poor performance. And then we pulled something out of the bag. Defensively, we were okay, I will say. But going forward, obviously, there are improvements to be made. The hitting it into the channels, to me, is fine if it's not 10 miles in front of whoever it's supposed to be. I did think for a minute that we'd gone to the Renato Sanchez of just kicking the ball and passing it to the advertising board. But, you know, fair play, we did pull a goal out of the hat. And I will say we do need to improve massively going forward. And I suppose that will come. I mean, Tav didn't start today. So when Tav starts and gets really into the groove, then we'll probably see more. And then there'll be signings that we make as well. So, yeah, improvements to be made. But I think I'm obviously happy with the point.
Where do you think we need to improve then?
Well, out wide, I think obviously it is great that Jones did well, but in an ideal world, he probably would be out on loan if we got the options. But yeah, definitely out wide. Obviously, we need another striker as well because Matt Crook's playing up front second half was interesting. And O'Neill Warnock said midweek that Matt can play there if needed. But again, in an ideal world, you probably wouldn't have Matt Crooks as a striker. So definitely winger and striker, and then maybe somebody to take the heat off Tav.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, and Neil Warnock really did allude to it in his press conference where he said that he's only got one striker and he had Corbin on the bench, and I appreciate he has COVID, but just doesn't exist. He's like a shadow now. He's like a ghost of Rockcliffe, isn't he?
He's the new Dejan Stjanovic.
Yeah, the new Stjanovic. Tom, but overall, happy with a point?
Yeah, definitely. I think looking at it positively, we're a point better off than we were at the same point last season.
Progress.
Probably again playing the strongest team in the league, because I thought that was Wofford last year, and they were missing about 20 players when they played us. So, I think in terms of the performance, we looked stronger, more solid defensively. So I'd like to see us keep that up this season. Echo what Dana said, that we are weaker out wide though, and that's where I think we need the signings and the quality coming in. Obviously need another striker as well, hopefully. And I don't want to put too much pressure on him straight away, because I feel like we've seen this a bit too much over the last couple of years with like the likes of Jed and Coulson, where expectations go up quite a lot based off like a couple of performances. But If Jones can break into the team this year and offer something different out wide, then I'd be all for that as well. I think winger is probably, I don't think it's easy for any player, but I think it's easier position for a youth player to break through into than on any other part of the pitch. Say like goalkeeper or striker would be like in quite a difficult position. But with the younger players, you know, sometimes you need that kind of, I don't know what the right word is there. Not naivety, but
arrogance.
Yeah, like
it's a bit of like anger, a bit of like a bit of swagger around him.
Yeah, but also like not having tactics kind of coached into him at that point, where they're always kind of looking up and looking to go forward and take the man on. I think that type of thing from Jones, we saw it a couple of times today. I thought he was incredible at winning fouls as well. I thought the way he used his body and actually left a trailing leg at points and stuff like that worked. It worked really well for us in winning these set pieces. And then I did a bit of research at work the other day. I think we were 8 or 9 in the starting 11 who were over 6 foot now. So really, in terms of set pieces, we should be scoring a few this season, and that type of play can help us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we can create the fouls and create the the set pieces, then it might work in our favour. But to be honest, today it didn't really seem to happen too much at all. I can't remember a time when we have scored from a set piece. I think it was Josh Corburn last season. I think that was the last time we scored a set piece. But oh no, I don't think we scored many anyway. But let's talk about transfers, actually, because this week we caught up with Gazette reporter Craig Johns to get his opinion on Borough's transfer window so far and to see if Borough are done yet.
I think if I was asked to use one word to sum up Middlesbrough's summer transfer window so far, I think that word would be pragmatic. Now, I'll come on to Martin Pajero soon, but I'll start with the five signings that were made before Pajero first. And that's where I come at with the pragmatic view of Borough's transfer window so far. You have Joe Lumley, who they've signed in goal. Now, obviously, we could all see last season how much Borough needed a reliable goalkeeper, how much they lacked that. And so far, Joe Lumley looks exactly that. And we did see last season at the Riverside exactly what Joe Lumley is capable of. He's an excellent shot stopper. And that was unfortunately something, an area where Marcus Bettinelli fell short last season. So I think, you know, Joe Lumley certainly comes in and strengthens the goalkeeping department. Lee Peltier comes in, and as well as adding much-needed cover at the back, I think more importantly, he brings experience and leadership to the dressing room, which is something that, from day one at arriving at the club, Neil Warnock has spoken about needing more of behind the scenes. So Lee Peltier brings that. Matt Crooks comes into the midfield, and I think, you know, as well as adding height and kind of strength to Borough's midfield, Crooks has underrated skills on the ball from what I've seen so far and from what I've been told by experts at Rotherham. He drives the team forward from midfield. He adds that link between midfield, between defence and attack. And he can add goals too, which is something that Borough's midfield didn't have a lot of last season. Sammy Amiobi comes in as the winger. Now, unfortunately, of course, Sammy has a knee injury and there's no time frame yet on when he might be back. We, of course, haven't seen him at all in pre-season, which is a real shame. But, you know, we all know what Sammy is capable of on his day. You know, he's been inconsistent throughout his career, which is perhaps why he hasn't, you know, reached the very top. But Warnock was quite confident when he was bringing him in that he could help him, you know, produce what he can do on his better days on a more consistent basis by giving him the right role in the team. And it is a real shame that so far we haven't been able to get Amiobi on the pitch. We haven't seen him fit, because I think ultimately he offers what Borough need out wide and in the final third of the pitch, which is, you know, something a bit unpredictable. He can change games, he can make things happen, and that's what Borough needed. That's what Borough lacked at times last season. They were at times a bit laboured, too slow, a bit predictable, and they didn't create nearly enough. And that's something Sammy Amiobi does. That's his game. So, again, a good signing on paper, but they need to get him fit. And then finally, of the five before Pajero, there was Uche Ikpeazu up front as well. We all, again, like at the other end of the pitch in goal up front, we could all see last season the issues that Borough had. You know, they didn't have that big focal point up top, that target man. And that's exactly what Uche Ikpeazu is. You know, he's not a fancy footballer. He's not always pleasing on the eye. But what he is a brilliant, old-fashioned centre-forward. He plays with his back to goal. He's unselfish. He brings others into play. And he works hard, and he's got a lot of desire. And I think Borough fans will really enjoy watching him, because he gives that kind of commitment that Borough fans love. So I do think he will prove popular at the club. So, yeah, I mean, those five names mentioned above, I mean, you know, none of them are, you know, they don't get the pulses rating. They're not exciting signings by any means. But as I say, that's why, for me, describing Borough's transfer window so far would be pragmatic, because all five come in and add something to this squad that it lacked last season, which is why I find it particularly encouraging. But if what you are looking for is somebody to get your pulse racing, you know, that exciting signing, then what a time, just on the eve of the season, to announce the arrival, finally, of Martin Pajero. The 22-year-old Argentine is obviously, you know, highly touted and really highly rated in Argentina. You speak to most Argentinian experts, and they believe it's a coup for any championship team in England to land Pizarro. He was an absolute star for Banfield in the Copa Diego Maradona, which was a contingency competition that they set up last year because of COVID and the league not running. You know, he took Banfield to the final of that competition, and he was the star of that team, and that prompted interest from River Plate, from Boca Juniors, Argentina's two biggest sides, but also big clubs in Europe. One I know was Inter Milan. Ultimately, Pizarro, for whatever reason, has decided to come to Middlesbrough, and you know, it's a really, really exciting signing. There's a bit of unknown with him, an unknown quantity. What can he bring? Can he adapt? But that makes it all the more exciting. I think it's one of the most intriguing Middlesbrough signings for many years. And certainly if he can adapt to the league, he looks like everything Middlesbrough need. And he could be an absolute game changer. As much as that is, that's a very positive outlook on Borough's transfer window so far. But, you know, it's not done yet by any stretch of the imagination. We know that. They're going to need another goalkeeper. They're going to need a left-sided defender because Hayden Coulson, he wasn't given a squad number, and we do know he is going to leave on loan before the end of the window. That won't be sanctioned until somebody comes in. And then they also need one more striker too, because I think ultimately Tuber Akpom is probably going to be leaving. There is also potential for them to get another winger. There's somebody they are looking at, somebody they like in that role. And if, I would imagine it would be a Premier League loan, but if another striker come up, they could sign two strikers before the end of the window. But I think it has to be said, you know, I mean, you know, in an ideal world, we'd love to be sitting here now with the squad ahead of the opening game of the season, you know, at the squad where you want it to be, and you don't need any more signings. But realistically, in the current market, that just isn't going to happen. There's no clubs like that, and actually with six signings so far, you know, Borough have been one of the most active sides in the Championship. Of course, you could, you know, Bamba's looking likely, Saul Bamba is looking likely to get a 1-year player coach deal as well. He'd had more experienced leadership and backup at the back. So, you know, you look at it and you think, you know, if Borough signs Saul Bamba and then get at least three of the four or five that they potentially could get before the end of the window, you're looking at Borough making 11 to 12 signings this summer, and in the current climate, both financially and a difficult market, that's unbelievable work, really. And as I say, every signing, you know, presuming they get that left-sided defender to provide cover for Mark Bowler, presuming they get the goalkeeper to provide more cover for Lumley, and presuming they get the striker to add competition with Piezu, that's a very good window where Borough have ultimately learned from the mistakes of last season, learned where it went wrong last season, and went about improving their squad for that. So yeah, still work to be done, but you know, it's not for the want of trying that they don't have the positions filled that they ultimately do want, and like I say, they have until the end of August to do that. So you know, I think it's looking good.
So, Tom, pragmatic and a little bit of sexy, according to Craig Johns. But Borough aren't done yet. It sounds very optimistic, with the likes of a potential winger, a Premier League loan striker, another striker on top of that. You've got a centre-back coming in, a goalkeeper and a left-sided defender as well. exciting. But what do you think Borough should prioritise first in the remaining days?
I think they need to hurry up and give us the signing we've all been waiting for. No one really cared that much about Pizarro, but get Saul Bamba announced.
And Luke Daniels.
Who's Saul Bamba? I've never heard of him.
But I think, like I said earlier, quality out wide and up front, really. I think we need another similar option to Ikpeazu, and also a very different option who can come on and hopefully get in the right positions to change the game. But it does seem like we've got a lot of options in the midfield now who can play off a decent hold-up striker. But as I said earlier as well, just a bit of quality out wide to get some balls into the box. And based on that performance today, we should always have about five people in the box waiting for it as well.
Options.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it.
Dana, Daniels has mentioned, of course, the goalkeeper, Sol Bamba too, and Sol Bamba could be on a player coach deal, is what Craig mentioned there. But who do you think Boro should be looking at as well? Because there could be another four or five coming in.
Yeah, well, I mentioned off air, I'd quite like Boro to look at Ellis Sims from Everton. Obviously, mentioned there about a Premier League loan striker. He impressed for Blackpool last season, but he's different. He'll obviously offer something different. When I watched him at Blackpool last season, he was the type that would get in behind and use his pace. And I think that's someone that we need, a bit of a plan B, someone that can maybe play off Ikpeazu if we do go for two up front, for example. To be fair, I'd just take any striker at this point, apart from not Troy Deeney and not Andre Gray.
All right then, okay, we'll rule those out. We'll rule those until then. But yeah, the Mills will have to be really active. You know, it's shown today that we probably need a little bit more quality and depth. That, you know, yes, when you looked at Fulham today, they had so much quality and abundance, and it was nice to see Cabano play. Appreciate for the other side, but I thought it was going to scream Schutthausery 1-0 93rd minute Cabano hit off his backside and goes in, but
he had a chance to score, didn't he, from a header, I think.
Yeah but I reckon he just didn't want to score me. That's what I think, you know.
Yeah. Well, Warnock was having a word with him at the end, wasn't he? He'd give him a rollicking if he scored against us today.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, very true. I feel like he won't see the end of him, to be honest. But Keith Stroud was always horrendous today.
Oh, my God, I was going to mention him.
We're in London, aren't we? We're in London.
Oh, my God. How many times have I mentioned that Keith Stroud is the final boss of all inept referees in this division? Jesus Christ. This time last season against Watford, he kissed the ball on the way out. This time he blows a kiss to it. All right, Keith. He's literally the Mike Dean of the Championship, just a celebrity ref. He's made for that celebrity ref account, I will say that.
Well, maybe Keith just loves footballs. You know?
I don't know. I think today he just loved being the centre of attention at times and loved his yellow card.
Exactly, Mike Dean.
It was probably one of the worst refereeing performances I've seen since that UFC referee found himself in the middle of Boro versus Blackburn last year.
What about Gavin Ward? That came after that, didn't it?
Yeah, Gavin Ward against Swansea too. I mean, it's nice to know that refereeing decisions haven't improved in the Championship this season. That means nature is healing for sure. But, I mean, we were going completely off topic and talking about Keith Stroud, but I want to chat about outgoings. But Hayden Coulson-Dana, not been given a number this season. We kind of knew the writing was on the wall, really. He didn't really have a future. But do you think this is the end for Hayden Coulson permanently or on a loan deal?
I would say yes, even if it's a season-long loan. I mean, I've mentioned so many times that I think his time's probably up at Boro now. Obviously, when he broke in under Woodgate, he looked really good. Not taking that away from him, but he's just not really kicked on. And I think I mentioned this last season and people said, well, he's not really had the opportunity to. And I think that is a valid point. I mean, he was played right wing back against Barnsley, which is the complete opposite side to his actual natural stronger foot, which is obviously always going to be difficult. But I just feel as though he's the type of player that, although I think he definitely can be a Championship player, he's probably a top-end League One player with the potential to be definitely an established player. I think we just have to let him go and let him find a home and enjoy his football and his future.
Yeah, let him be a peacock and fly. I mean, if you've never seen the other guys, you wouldn't have not got that reference at all. But
well, I haven't, but I just that made me laugh.
Oh, well, comedian today, Anna. Tom Chubarakpom, appreciate our cover today and hope he gets well soon. But Neil Warnock mentioned that we've only got one striker in Uche Ikpeazu with Josh Coburn sat on the bench with him. But he's rumoured to Besiktas in Turkey. Why do you think it's not worked out for Chubarakpom at Middlesbrough? Because he came with, you know, a point to prove. He scored on his debut, of course, against QPR with that lovely glancing header. But he hasn't really, you know, kicked on from there, really, has he? So why do you think it's not worked out for him?
I think he just hasn't fit into the way that Warnock's wanted to play. I don't think it's helped that when we were apparently looking at signing him, we never really saw him play live. And I don't buy what Warnock said, where he was like, this is the guy I've wanted all pre-season, because it clearly wasn't based on last season. I think he just hasn't suited the style of play. It's a bit unfortunate for him, because he seemed to be doing well at, was it PA OK we signed him from? It might have like derailed his career a little bit, so hopefully he can get it back on track if he goes to Besiktas. But yeah, I think it's unfortunate that he just hasn't fit into the system.
Yeah, I feel like he could work with Uche up top, but I think it's like with his wages, Borough trying to transition into more of a self-sustainable club now, and it doesn't really make sense. If we can get him off the wage bill and try and bring in three or four players, I think Neil Warnock was quoted the other week where he was saying that we've brought in five players for the price of what Britt was last season. So, I mean, that's fantastic business for us. But if we can get maybe Tuber off the books, which I still think he has a part to play this season if we do want to keep him around. But if we do let him go, I feel like I think that move to Turkey would be a good move for him. But let's chat about transfers, and not just for this transfer window, but for the future transfers, because Middlesbrough this week announced that Norwich's head of recruitment, Kieran Scott, will be joining the Borough as head of football in September. Scott was the man behind the signings of Emi Buendia, Timo Pukki, and also of all the recruitment as well at Norwich. And he's been highly praised by Stuart Webber, who is the director of football at Norwich. And Norwich seem to have a bit of a sinking ship at the minute, because everyone seems to be leaving there. But Dana, we've spoke a lot on this podcast. We've even wrote two blogs about it. We've had about 100 podcasts where we said Borough need to move in this director of football system. We finally have, and it seems to be quite a coup, doesn't it?
It does. To be fair, I think we have made some good business this summer, but Kieran Scott could be the best of it. I mean, I think James, who runs Erem's Football, said it the best, that Borough are finally moving into the 21st century. I mean, I was having a look at who has a head of football: Forest, QPR, Fulham, Birmingham, Peterborough. West Brom did, but they got rid of him. And that vacancy is still there. I don't know whether they're going to go back to it or not. But you mentioned their self-sustainability. Borough have had, obviously, Karanka, Mong, Tony Pulis, Jonathan Woolgate and Neil Warnock since 2017. And with that comes, obviously, different players, different squads. You had Cyrus Christie come in and then leave in Flint when he was brought in. Jonathan Woodgate got rid of him pretty much straight away when he was appointed. So that's not self-sustainable. And Lee Dykes, who was the sporting director at Bury before their demise, I think he was actually brought in to sort of stop that from happening, but it was all a bit too late. But he said that we cannot be self-sustainable if every time there's a change of manager, all the plans go out the window. And I think that's what Borough have been doing in the past couple of years. We've just, you know, we've gone forward with one manager. It hasn't worked out. We've got rid of him, brought in another one. It's not self-sustainable. So hopefully Kieran Scott can sort of head all of this. I'd love to know what the role of head of football actually entails, because when I was looking at when Birmingham appointed, I've got to get this right, is it Craig Gardner? It will be Craig Gardner.
Oh, it's one of the gardeners.
One of the gardeners. Alan Titchmarsh. one of the gardeners is their head of football or head of something, technical director. I don't know what the difference is between the two.
Title head of something.
Yeah, head of something. And they detailed what that entailed. It'd be good to know what head of football entails.
So I can answer your question.
Exactly.
So in the Gazette reporting that Kieran Scott coming in is going to take all of the football decisions with Neil Warnock. So that'd be like recruitment, making deals get over the line and try to find a certain system for Middlesbrough to have like a philosophy, which we've kind of said about previously about Project Borough and this new transitional period. Well, what else should we call it? Do you know what I mean? Project Emnes. We'll call it Project Emnes times two then. still waiting for Emnes to come good.
It's our next manager.
He probably will be, yeah. It will be, but what will happen is Neil Bowser will move away from the football and decisions to more of like the commercial aspect of the club, which he's very, very good at. And I think when I wrote about the blog about Middlesbrough rebuilding constantly, and I'll come on to that in a second, I really did emphasise on that point. Bowser really needs to move away from that. It's not because of, like, I mean, well, since he's been chief executive, we've had quite a lot of issues in terms of transitions of managers. You know, you were saying that, Dana, we've had eight managers in the last 15 years. But also before that, it was 2-11 or something. It was Brian Robson and Steve McLaren. Yeah. So with that, yeah, I think with Bowser moving away and really focused on commercialisation, Mills were trying to increase revenue, that makes perfect sense. And Scott's just going to come in and work with the managers, and hopefully we see the fruits of that, really. But Tom, we've Aaron Scott coming in, head of football, to take recruitment matters off Bowser. Are you happy with that direction? Because Middlesbrough have done tremendous business this summer. I think if we get the extra five players that that Craig Johns was alluding to, and we could have over like probably about 11 transfers this in the summer in a COVID world, the way money's tight, that's fantastic business. So would you be happy with Kieran Scott taking lead of that?
Yeah, definitely. I think you only have to look at some of the people who some of the teams who went up in the last few years. Like Brentford have always been, quite a decent team to watch in the Championship. So I'm glad they're finally gone because they tend to beat us quite a lot now. But like Norwich, some of the other teams you mentioned at QPR are picking up as well. I think it probably is time we kind of modernised and went in that direction. I think he's got a proven track record at Norwich in terms of recruitment. I listened to the Norwich podcast with him when the news broke the other day. Mm-hmm. Well, broke again because I know it was from about a month ago as well. But in that he mentioned kind of the different departments that Norwich have in terms of the recruitment. So I just hope we're like aiming to modernise that side of things as well, because that does seem like it plays quite a big part in the background of what he does. It seems exciting. Looking forward to next season to see what happens, really.
He was mentioning philosophy a lot, and Daniel Farke, a player, came up a lot, didn't it, during that? And they mentioned Jakob Sorensen, who they identified as immediately a Daniel Farke player. So that's what we want. That's what I think the golden thread was supposed to be, but it just didn't have the right people behind it, like we've said many times. And yeah, I mean, if the head of football tag and position is somebody that, like you've said then, like I've done research, it dictates who signs, who saw the strategy for the academy, the future of the head coach, etc., then fingers crossed that this is the dawning of a new age that we've always sort of wanted, and moving into the 21st century, like James said.
We're still using Keith Lamb's fax machine, so I think we finally got rid of that because we've signed so many players this window. But we're heading in the right direction then, Dana, with this appointment?
I hope so, yeah. I mean, it will be interesting to see how he does without Stuart Webber. Of course, he hasn't been a head of football before. He's been head of recruitment, so we will see. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy with it. It's something that we have been crying out for, and it's good. I think it's planning for the future and that long-term plan and long-term project that we've always wanted. And this is good now, because I think, Neil Warnock isn't going to be here forever. We can't really plan a future with Neil Warnock, so we need to do what we can to plan without him. And I think that this is the best thing to do, and it's good. It's props to Borough for that. I'm surprised, but happily surprised.
Mm. Tom? Happy?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, can't wait for the start of next season just to see what direction we're going to go in. I feel like, Warnock kind of alluded to it in his press conference as well, that he's maybe not going to be around, after the end of this season. So, yeah, I'm just interested to see what direction we end up taking and what type of player we end up signing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think it'd be interesting to see what we do. And when we talk, when I spoke about the rebuild, and when I wrote about that blog and how these Wyatt Mills were in this cycle for so many years, there's so many parts to it as well. And you can listen, you can read the blog on our website, theboroughbreakdown.com. But the blog basically was about, there's five stages within this rebuild job, and now you start at the very top with Steve Gibson and Neil Bowser, and they have to have a discussion of where we right now as a club and where we're going to go forward. So when Dana was saying about the golden thread, that was perfect. That was exactly what you want, but you need the people behind it. So it's exactly what you were saying there, Dana. The second point of that is your manager. So someone, you've got a project in mind, so it's Project Borough. The manager fits the project. The project doesn't fit the manager. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that's what they have at Brighton, isn't it? Under Dan Ashworth, you've mentioned that on the podcast before.
Exactly that, with Graham Potter in yeah, charge. So when Graham Potter does leave, they'll still stay in the same direction. They'll have a certain style, but exactly how they want to play for it. And then it comes to a few things. So obviously the players and recruitment. So you buy the players to fit your system, and then the fans. So your fans have to be bought in, which I think we are. I think the majority of Borough fans like this direction we're going in. But the one final thing is the process. Now, Borough fans don't have patience, and it's quite clear that we don't, because, there's some players that can come in and after 1 minute, they're the worst things since Lee Dongoog when he missed that sitter from 2 yards out on his debut. You know what I mean? So it's like, but what I'm saying is, like, this process is going to take failures. It's going to take time, and it probably won't get it right straight away. this golden thread generation is probably going to come back. Middlesbrough will find a new word or a new system to rename it, but this golden thread generation, which is coming through, is probably going to be what Middlesbrough want. They'll want to use the academy as much as they possibly can. They'll want to have a system where we probably play the ball in the fall a little bit more now rather than playing hoofball for how many years we've played it. And we'll find a system which fits us as a club and a town as well. But like I said, like I stress, like it's the process. Like, unfortunately, you're not going to see instant success with this. You might see a couple of gems here and then, but I think overall, I don't think we'll see real success until maybe two or three seasons down the line, Tom, when those were more self-sustainable. You know, we have good revenues. We were able to like spend within our means, and I think we're really doing that this season with the five transfers instead of well, costing the same amount as Britt. So yeah, I feel it's all heading in the right direction. I think Middlesbrough are really becoming more self-sustainable, and I feel like we're hopefully, you know, maybe going to be pushing for promotion in not just this season, but maybe next season. I think this year it's going to be a hell of a ride, but I do think we'll fall away. I still think we need to bring five or six players in, like Craig mentioned. If we can't do that, again, we'll have to see where we are in January, but I don't think we'll have just enough. But let's chat about the road to Wembley, because that starts on Wednesday night when Middlesbrough travel to Blackpool in the Carabao Cup. Guys, let's break down Blackpool. How do we feel about the game? Do you think we're gonna go there and be on the road to Wembley still, or do you think we're going to take a detour and go on the old Pepsi Max and then never return?
I mean, hopefully we can progress to the next round. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of youngsters play. The thread that we put up this morning of players to look out for, I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe a Jack Robinson on the bench, or maybe, I wouldn't say start, but maybe get on the bench. Zai Jones might start. It's an opportunity there for the young players that we've got to really put themselves in Neil Warnock's mind of, I'm here and I'm available if you know, we don't get the options that we want in the transfer window. But I really like Blackpool. I want them to stay up this season. I think they will. I know when I posted my pre-season predictions, a lot of people were surprised I put them so high. I think I put them 14th or 15th.
I'm in the top six, didn't you?
Not quite. I mean, wouldn't be surprised if they end up there, to be fair, with the Championship. But no, I think they've got a good team. Gerry Yates, obviously, the goals that he scored from last season, they'll want him to bring that into this season. They've got former Borough player there and James Husband actually getting game time and not being
someone's understudy. Is that where he is now? Is that where he is? Wow.
Played centre-back yesterday for him.
Did he? Wow. Yeah. I thought he just combusted into air, you know what I mean?
No, he's very much still there and wow. And playing football. But yeah, they've got some good players. I do like Yates. I think that John Jules, who they've just signed, is a promising, or seems a promising player as well. So yeah, I think I'm looking forward to seeing how Blackpool apply themselves after the dramatic equaliser that they got the other day.
Okay, Tom.
I mean, looking at their players and the way they lined up yesterday, I'm amazed that I'm finally seeing a team that lines up in a 4-4-2 in the Championship. But yeah, I'm looking at that game. I hope some of the younger players get a run out. I'm not especially bothered about a cup run at the moment. I think I'd rather we kind of saved all our first team is for the league and kind of not risking any injuries away at Blackpool on a Wednesday night. So, but I mean, obviously it'd be good to win anyway. So yeah, just give the fringe players and the youth players and around the squad a chance on Wednesday, I think.
Do you think Pajaro comes in, make his debut?
I mean, potentially might get like 45 minutes or something, but is he the type of player that you want to be risking in a first-round Carabao Cup game, or do you save him for Bristol City? Personally, I think I'd save him for the Bristol City game.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think, guys? Got predictions against Blackpool?
Ooh, I'm going to go... I'm going to say 2-0 Borough.
2-0 Borough for Dana. Go through.
I was also thinking 2-0.
2-0 as well. I'm going to go... I think I'll go 1-0, I think. Borough 1-0, and then we're going on the road at Wembley. But then let's chat about Bristol City as well. Because next Saturday is the first time that Borough have had more than, obviously, well, had the fans back. Really, last year it was Bournemouth for one game, 1,000. So, but does that really count? 1,000 fans, really? Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it was good for that one game.
Yeah. Well, it's the first time that Neil Warnock will see the Riverside. Yeah. nearly full. I'm going to probably say about 25,000 will probably be there. I'm so excited for the game. But should we break down Bristol City first before I ask you what you're looking forward to the most? Yeah, let's break them down first. Who wants to go first?
I'll start. I mean, the lineup yesterday, 4-2-3-1. They were playing Blackpool yesterday as well. They've got a couple of Leicester players at centre midfield who I forgot existed, to be honest, in Matty James and Andy King. Chris
they
Martin.
Must be getting on now. Didn't he,
30 and 32.
Yeah, didn't he sign them? He signed them for Leicester, didn't he? Like in 2003 or something, didn't he? So like, yeah, they're thereabouts.
Yeah, Chris Martin's taking time out from Coldplay to play up front from him. So it's just looking, a bit of a championship squad, that I think. But yeah, yesterday was a very close game between them and Blackpool. 11 shots to 7 in favour of Bristol City, 2 shots on target to 1, and 51% possession to 49. So it's a bit difficult to judge off one game, especially the first one of the season, whether or not they're both fantastic teams or they cancel each other out or maybe they're equally poor. But I don't know, it's the beauty of the first 10 games or so where the table really forms. So we'll have to see what they're like next week.
Absolutely. It's a brand new season, but they did struggle quite a lot towards the end of back end of last season. I think as soon as they beat us, everyone just falls off a cliff. So
that part's done now.
Yeah, that part's done. They beat us, they'll just chill for the rest of the season. But are there any more to add?
Yeah, they seem to have moved on a lot of players that have been there for quite a few seasons. Jamie Patterson, obviously one. We had him on trial, didn't we? And then he scored yesterday for Swansea. But yeah, him, Jack Hunt, for Marajeju, Liam Walsh. There's a few players there that they've gotten rid of. They've brought in Rob Atkinson, Andy King, Matty James. I think they've struggled to bring players in, but also I sort of see Bristol City, along with Blackburn, actually, as a team that have stagnated a little bit. A lot of their fans were a little bit disgruntled on social media yesterday because of the draw that got, obviously the 3 points got snatched away from them at the end by Blackpool. But I just sort of see them on a little bit of a downward trajectory, and they're obviously in a transition period. Obviously, as I said, players have gone. Players are really yet to come in to sort of fill those positions, but they were talking about a lack of creativity, which we know all too well. But yeah, I think Bristol City probably won't be, well, they're not the same Bristol City as the ones that always beat us and beat us comfortably, but they'll still prove to be a tough opposition for us. And yeah, I'm quietly confident about it.
Quietly confident? So what's your score prediction?
1-0 Borough.
1-0 Borough, what the hell? 2 back-to-back wins.
I got the score right today.
You did? You did with a 1-1,
yeah? 1-1, yeah. Mystic dinner.
I mean, to be fair, I was at 1-0 Fulham, and then, we didn't have a shot on target until later on, so
Matt Bowler saved the day for me.
Well, to be fair, I did say player of the season. Anyway, Tom.
I'm going to go 2-0 Borough. I'm going to go optimistic that we're going to win first game back in the Riverside properly.
Optimistic Tom's back, absolutely love it. But guys, it's the first game back that we've all been at the Riverside, so it's going to be an emotional experience. But what he's looking forward to the most, is there anything that's standing out for you, Dana? Yeah, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah. Chips and curry. I am really looking forward to it. That is going to be the first thing that I'm going to get. It's funny, actually, because my dad was talking to someone the other day who I've been to the match with before, and she said that her husband mentioned, when Pig Bank comes on, don't look at me because I'm going to be crying. And that's probably going to be me as well. I think we're going to go there and we're going to be so overcome with emotion that we're back. It's happy, it's sad with people that have obviously maybe passed away that aren't with us anymore, that should be. It's seeing your extended footballing family again. It's just going to be so many emotions. I wouldn't be surprised if I do cry.
Don't cry already. You keep those tears away. You keep them till Saturday, Dana. Tom, what are you excited for the most? I mean, it can't be as good as chips and curry.
I'm in hospitality next week, so
thanks for the invite. You know what I mean? It's all right, Tom. No worries, mate.
He doesn't get the real experience.
Yeah, no.
No. I've upgraded tickets for my dad's birthday present last week, First one back, he's got that experience to look forward to. It's just going to be great being back. I think the only downside for me this season is that I won't be selling fanzines around the ground because at the moment Rob's not going to be doing that. So I've missed out on that little bit of kind of standing in the tunnel, seeing all the people I usually sell to, listening to that guy in the underpass play his guitar.
Sings Wonderwall for 90 minutes.
Oh, no, it's, he sang Fly Me to the Moon quite a few times because I paid him. But no, I didn't honestly, but like it's just a great song. I think he had a couple of Beatles ones in there as well. But that's the part thing I'll still miss, but it's just going to be good being back. Like, you know, it was, March last year since the last one, and that was poor football at the time as well. So hopefully... something good to look forward to.
Absolutely. Just on the Fly Me to the Moon, how can you get the Fly Me to the Moon magazines now?
I think you need to order them online. Rob on Twitter, I think it's Rob_FlyMeToTheMoon, has shared a few links to subscribe to the season.
Okay, no, that sounds good to me. I feel like I should subscribe to that. I'm excited as well. I'm not doing hospitality like this posh person over here right next to me. I had to choose my words very wisely there.
I read what you wanted to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, I'll just get my tickets from work and I'll beat you to it, you know. I think I'm really excited. I mean, just to get back into my seat, sit back in the north stand and just there, and it's been miserable for 90 minutes when we're getting trounced 5-0, and just I'll be like, nature's healed, and we're back to normal, innit? But I mean, look, it's going to be a really good atmosphere, it'll be a party atmosphere. I think an all red faction is saying that everyone's going to dress up in red, and hopefully we can try and get the 3 points. And it'd be nice to see Neil Warnock and the touchdown as well. And hopefully we just put in a performance, really. I think it'd be very Borough-esque, though, to just get absolutely tramped. But I feel like everyone would just be happy if it did, you know what I mean? So
just happy to be there.
Yeah, just happy to be
like
there.
Ashley calling the Roma team for...
yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I reckon the players must get a bit of a buzz tomorrow. Like, I mean, not tomorrow, next week. I wish it was tomorrow. they must get a bit of a buzz, like having played in an empty stadium for a season and a half. Just... having, hopefully about 25,000 Borough fans cheering them on. And then hopefully that kind of sticks around to that level, but we'll see.
Absolutely. Do we do score predictions? My mind just went blank there.
For Crystal City, yeah.
I guess my mind just went blank there. But anyway, well, that means that's it then. So thanks, guys. Thank you very much for joining me. And you guys, if you like this podcast, but do give us a 5-star written Apple podcast and give us a follow on your podcast provider. That helps us get found and Borough fans find it a Borough podcast to listen to. But that's it. The 2021 and 2022 season starts with a 1-1 draw at Fulham. But the road to Wembley is beginning on Wednesday against Blackpool and then back to the Riverside on Saturday. But for now, this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. And that was all your matchday chatter in a pod. Up the Borough Breakdown.
Wants support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.